Well, how many of you have ever heard the phrase, you should never hate anything? How accurate is that? And are there things that we should hate? We'll look at Psalm chapter 11, verse 5 as we get started. Psalm chapter 11, verse 5. Says, the Lord tries the righteous. He tests them. But the wicked and him that loves violence, his soul hates. So God said he hates violence. He hates particular things. And when we think of wanting to become like God, if we say, well, we shouldn't hate anything, that would be wrong. Because if we're going to be like God, God says he hates violence. Today we're going to spend a little bit of time going over a particular proverb that describes seven things that God hates and seven things that we need to be aware of that God cannot stand. He doesn't want any part of these things. I want to start in a preface over in Proverbs chapter 6, and we'll start in verse 12. Proverbs chapter 6, and in verse 12, says, a naughty person, a wicked man, walks with a froward or perverse mouth. He winks with his eyes, saying it's all in jest. He speaks with his feet. If you've ever seen somebody talking and they just kind of shuffle their feet, you wonder, why are they so nervous? Speaks with his feet, or stomps their feet in some cases, as other commentaries will state. But he teaches with his fingers. If you say, well, how would he teach with his fingers? If you've ever seen somebody, I'm going to tell you something. What I'm telling you is the truth. And behind their back, they have their fingers crossed. Teaching with their fingers. Describes somebody who has all of these characteristics, all of these traits. Henry commentary states, very artfully and with design, he has the subtlety of a serpent. And he carries on a project with great deal of craft and management. With his eyes, with his feet, and with his fingers, he expresses his malice when he dares not even speak out. Some individuals can portray these things that we're reading of here, and it says even if they don't speak out. Sometimes they do it through others. Sometimes they just do it through the craftiness of the way they're presenting themselves. Rather, thus, he carries out a plot with those about him, and he makes use of the tools of his wickedness and understanding, the ill meaning of the wink of the eye. You know, telling something and then winking like it's not really true, but you have to know what he's saying through the wink of the eye. Or the stamp of the foot, or the least motion of his fingers. He gives orders for evil doing, and yet would not be thought to do so, but has ways of concealing what he does so that he's not to be suspected. This is not just an individual who is deceptive, but it's one who uses others to be deceptive for him. It describes somebody who has this type of, not just what he's doing, but his character traits. This is, describes who he is. Verse 14, it says, frowardness, or perversity, fraud, is in his heart, and he devises mischief continually, and he sows discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly, and suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. So there are things laid out here that preface and show an attitude of heart. It shows things that God says, this is an attitude of something I despise. Now we go to Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 16. Proverbs 6 and verse 16. We see things that God hates. He says, these six things does the Lord hate, and yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, feet that are swift to running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among the brethren. Now, why this type of writing? Why put down, these are six things that God hates and seven are abomination? It doesn't mean that the other six aren't an abomination. It just means as an entire package, as being complete, using the number seven, all of these things are an abomination to him. In the Hebrew, it says this, that this is a Hebrew form of coming to a climax in a situation. The teacher here is enumerating six qualities that are detestable. Seven represents completeness. He states seven, not the seventh, are an abomination. Some read it and they said, oh, the last one, he that sows discord, that's what's an abomination. No, all of them are an abomination. The seven altogether represent this abomination. He said, I want to take the time today I want to go through these things with you, taking the time to look at them individually, because God does hate these particular things. He lays them out, and we have to understand what they are and what they mean. Verse 16, it says, seven are an abomination. We know by looking at the end time prophecies, the abomination of desolation. We hear that word abomination. The word abomination in the Greek is a word that means something disgusting or something morally disgusting, an abhorrence, especially idolatry or an idol, is something that is an abomination. So God absolutely hates and abhors these things, and he says they're abomination to him. The first one listed is a proud look. In the King James, it literally says haughty eyes. Now, if we say somebody has haughty eyes, you might think, oh, their eyes are attractive. It's not haughty, it's H-A-U-G-H-T-Y, haughty eyes. But it's a look that God despises. And is it just the look? Now, we read about the individual, and that's why I read that context. It says he tries not to be noticed doing these things. So it's not trying to look that way. It's the attitude of heart. Proverbs chapter 21, we'll keep our place here in Proverbs 6. But Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 1 says, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of waters, and he turns it wherever he will. We have to understand, God can direct us wherever he wants us to go. It says, every way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord ponders the heart. He says, I want to look at what you're thinking, not just what is physically coming out of your mouth or what kind of physical signs you may be doing, as we read, with the fingers, with the shuffling of the feet, with the wink of the eye. He wants to know what is in the heart. And he says he ponders the heart. And God does look at our hearts, especially when we have his spirit. Verse 3, it says, to do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. The Henry commentary states, here it is implied that many deceive themselves with a conceit. And a lot of this goes back to pride. It goes back to an attitude of pride. It says they deceive themselves with a conceit that if they offer sacrifices, that's going to excuse them from doing justice. I've had individuals tell me, you know, why are you correcting me for doing this? I know it was wrong, but I do so much for the congregation. I do so much for the church. And it's like, you can do all you want for the church. And you can, it's just like all those who said, I was a martyr for you talking to Christ. I gave my life to you. I did all these things. And he said, I don't know you. He says they will excuse them. He thinks that they will excuse them from doing justice and procure them to a dispensation for the unrighteousness. And this makes their way seem right. Now, we know the proverb, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. So some have this attitude of, as long as I'm doing what is commanded, my heart's right. So I'm going to do all of the commandments of God. I'm going to act like I'm following them. And secretly, I'm winking the eye, crossing my fingers, shuffling the feet, causing all of these problems. Verse 4 says, a high look or a haughty look and a proud heart and the plowing of the wicked is sin. He said, God makes it very clear, it is sin. So we can't have a haughty look. And that's the first one that God lists as something that he hates. So what is a haughty look? Well, Psalm 131, verse 1 tells us the song. It's a song of degrees of David. Lord, my heart is not haughty. He wasn't saying his look wasn't haughty, but he says, my heart is not haughty, nor my eyes lofty. Neither do I exercise myself in great matters or do things that are too high for me. He says, I'm not trying to be noticed. I'm not trying to gain attention for myself. He said, I'm not trying to elevate myself to a different level that I shouldn't be at. It's the same expression of what is listed and what God hates. Romans 12:3 says, I say, though the grace of God is given to me, to every man that is among you, do not think of himself more highly than he ought to think. So in Romans 12, it says, don't think more highly than you should about yourself, but think soberly, according as God has dealt to every man the measure of faith. So it says, don't think more highly of ourselves. And that's what this haughty look is, to put ourselves above others or to think more highly of ourselves. And some do that by verbally saying, I'm better than everyone else. Some people do it by trying to act timid and act like they're not, I would never do those kind of things. I would never be like that. But what they're asking is, tell me that I am like that. They're still seeking those kind of things because the haughtiness is in the heart, not necessarily in what they're expressing. The word haughty means lifted up, proud, lofty, or raised up. It's an individual who places himself at a level above others, and one who is untouchable, one who is above reproach. I'm going to give several reference scriptures, but Isaiah 5 and verse 15, and I'll repeat it because I know some like to have the verses repeated. Isaiah 5 and verse 15 says, the mean man shall be brought down low, the mighty man shall be humbled, and the eyes of the lofty shall be humbled. The eyes of the lofty, those who, again, loft or elevate themselves, shall be humbled. So God will bring down the proud. He says they're going to be abased. Similarly, in Isaiah chapter 10, verse 33, Isaiah 10, 33 says, behold, the Lord of the host shall lop the bow with terror, and the high ones of stature shall be hewn down, and the haughty ones shall be humbled. Over and over in Psalms, Proverbs, Isaiah, it says the haughty are going to be brought down. Those who elevate themselves, and we read that in the blessing of the children, that they just discovered, talked among themselves, who's the greatest? Who's going to be, am I the greatest? You can tell me if I'm the greatest one here. They were elevating themselves and talking about who's going to be the greatest or who's going to make the biggest impression. And Christ said, that's not what it's about. So he tells us that they will be humbled. Proverbs 21 and verse 23. Proverbs 21 and in verse 23. Whoso keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. If you can contain your mouth, if you can control what you're saying, it said you will keep yourself from a lot of troubles. But a proud and haughty scorner is his name who deals in proud wrath. Proud here is a word that is in the Greek is zed, Z-E-D, and it means arrogant or presumptuous. So an arrogant or presumptuous individual or scorner is going to be dealing in proud wrath. Jameson Fossen Brown says, the reproachful name is deserved for those who treat others with anger and contempt. Treating others with contempt. And again, we mentioned that some will say things about themselves, you know, I'm better than anybody else at this. Others put individuals down or elevate themselves by placing blame or criticism on other individuals. And as it says here in Jameson Fossen Brown, they treat others with anger and contempt. So how do we treat others? How do we, in God's church and with His Spirit, even treating others within the world? And do we recognize a proud look? We should, and should be able to, because God says He hates a proud look and something that we need to avoid. Psalm 12 and verse 3 says, the Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things. We have to avoid that at all costs. God says, I don't want any part with those who are proud. And pride goes back to the sin of Satan. It goes back to the sin of Lucifer that changed his character and changed his nature because he was filled with pride. Let's go to Psalm chapter 40 and verse 4. Psalm chapter 40 and verse 4. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust and respects not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Now he's not talking about just ourselves individually, but he says, blessed is the man that makes the Lord his trust and not respecting the proud. I've had individuals tell me, you know, whatever decision this person makes, that's what I'm going to do because that's who I trust. And it's like, no, you should be trusting God because individuals are going to make mistakes. So it tells us here, don't respect the proud. And sometimes individuals, because of their pride, because of their presence and the way they approach other individuals, oh, yeah, this guy really knows what he's talking about. And they respect him to the point of now they're not trusting God. They're looking to an individual. And he says, don't respect the proud. If they're proud and they come across with that type of attitude and that type of heart, he says, we don't need to remove ourselves from that, not feed their ego. It says, nor such as turn aside to lies, those who depart from the straight path and incline to what is false or deceitful. Said if somebody does something that goes turning towards false and deceitful, he said, we need to remove ourselves from that. The reference is to those who are easily made to swerve from that which is true and honest to doing something delusive or false. Their integrity cannot be confided in. There is no security that they will be disposed to do right. Proverbs 28, verse 25 tells us, he that is of a proud heart, those who have a proud heart, those who have that character, and again it goes to the heart, stir up strife. If a person is proud, it's not just that they have an individual problem. They stir up strife. But he that puts his trust in the Lord shall be made fat. Pride or proud look doesn't have to come from power. Most of the time you think, well, if somebody's proud, it's because they're powerful, they have a position. It doesn't come from power, but it can even come from somebody who feels that they have knowledge or that they feel like they are better in some way or more elevated in some way. The idea is to, as of an individual, and I've had people say this, I know my Bible better than most people here. I've had individuals call me on the phone interested in the church, and they said, I know my Bible frontwards and backwards. And I'm like, oh. They said, I've read the Bible 20 times. I know it front and back. And they were wanting to come to Passover service. And so we started discussing things, and they said, I've been baptized. I knew what repentance is. And I asked about the laying on of hands, and they said, what do you mean? And I described laying on of hands. And so I went through all of the scriptures about laying on of hands, and they said, I've never heard such a thing. This is somebody who says, I know my Bible frontwards and backwards, but yet they didn't know some of the basics. And they chose not to come. They said, I don't want to come to your Passover service. Okay, it makes my decision a little bit easier. I don't have to tell them I really don't think you should be there. Especially with that attitude, with the heart behind it. But the idea of individuals, some will say, I know prophecy better than anyone else. I've studied prophecy inside and out, and I know what's going to happen, even to the point of coming up with their own ideas of here's what's going to happen at the end time. I've already figured it out. And my thought is always, oh, really? You figured it out. And they presented, I'm like, well, there's a lot of presumptions here. There's a lot of things that are in error. And, of course, they get upset because they have elevated themselves to the point of, I know prophecy, I know what this is, or I've been directly revealed this information. 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 3. This is Paul teaching Timothy, and he said, if a man teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness. Notice what he says. He said, if they will not consent to those things, he is proud, knowing nothing. Now, they can tell you, I know my Bible inside and out, but if you say, well, you know, we have to repent of sins, we have to, oh, no, Christ did it all for you. You go, okay, this is somebody who has a proud look, which is something God says he hates. He said he's proud, knowing nothing, but dotting about with questions and strifes of words, wherefore comes envy, strife, railings, and surmisings. Just as it says, a proud individual is one who stirs up strife. Usually if a person is proud about knowledge, they want to talk about it. They want to discuss. They said, oh, we're just having a discussion, but it's a debate and an argument. And they want to present what side they have. And God says, it's about stirring up strife. So here he says, he's proud and he doesn't know anything. It says in verse 5, perverse disputing from men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw yourselves. He said, not only do you not want to have a proud look, as it told us earlier in Proverbs, you don't want to follow those or look to those or trust in those who have this proud look. He says, withdraw yourselves from those who come across saying, I am proud. I know what I'm talking about. James 4:6 tells us he gives more grace. Wherefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. We talk about fasting. We just fasted for the Day of Atonement. We fast throughout the year to humble ourselves before God and to recognize we don't have it all. We need your help. We need your assistance. But he resists the proud and he gives grace to the humble. It's the opposite of a proud look. It's humility. And again, we have to make sure that we remain in a humble frame of mind as a child, just as we read earlier. Unless you humble yourself as this little child, unless you, as a child who says, why? When they start to talk and they learn that question, why? What is that? That's the moon. Why? Because God created it and put it in the, what are those? Those are stars. Why? What do stars do? They're always asking questions because they don't know. They don't, most young children, when they start to talk, go, I know. I already know all that. I know. No. That's when they become teenagers. Teenagers know. Little kids will say, why? Or tell me. Or what is this? They're teachable. They're humble. They don't come across as saying, I know it all. They're teachable. 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5. Says, likewise, you younger, submit yourselves to the elder. Yes, all of you be subject to one another. Now, most people say, well, I don't have to. I've heard people, especially after they've been through a lot, I'm not subject to anyone. Well, that's a dangerous state because you're always going to be subject to God the Father. You're going to be subject to Jesus Christ. And he says, be subject to those who are in authority over you. Here it says, be subject to one another. That means you're supporting and building up one another, helping one another, not elevating ourselves above one another. It says, be subject to one another, be clothed with humility. That means it's your presence, it's who you are, it's the heart. For God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. God says, I'll exalt you when the time is right. And in fact, we know how he's going to exalt us. He said, I'm going to give you the glory that is given to my Son. We're going to be revealed as the sons of God. So he says, humble yourselves now under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you, not that we exalt ourselves. Number two is a lying tongue. God hates a lying tongue. Strong said this word lying in the Greek means untruth, a sham. Now, when we think of lying, most people think of just verbally saying a lie. It comes right out of their mouth. Now, there's shams. There's things that people try to convince you of or trick you into, and there's all kinds of that now, especially on the internet, on Facebook, all kinds of things to draw people in, but it's a sham. It's to get their information. So it says, untruth, a sham, something that is deceitful, a falsehood, or a lie. Now, there's no doubt that a lie includes something that's partial truth, and that has been common among people as well. Well, I didn't tell a complete lie. I told part truth and part lie. Well, that's still a lie. You still gave untruth or were deceitful by having partial truth and part lie. And if you want to claim, well, I didn't lie completely. I only did half lie, half truth. Well, so did Satan in the Garden of Eden. So you can't say, well, he didn't do anything wrong. He did. It was a lie, and he's the father of lies. So we don't want to have this lying tongue. Tongue here in the Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown indicates somebody who is habitually speaking. Not that you made a mistake once and you said something wrong. That happens. And people say, you know, I said something that wasn't true. I thought it was, but I come to find out it's different. No, this is somebody who habitually speaks. It's part of their character. So a lying tongue is talking about somebody who does this as a source of habit. Somebody who speaks deceitfully, not just once, but as a regular action. Proverbs chapter 26. Proverbs 26 tells us about a lying tongue. Proverbs 26 and verse 28. A lying tongue hates those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. So when you think about that, a lying tongue hates those that are afflicted by it. If somebody is lying to you, that is not a form of love. If somebody is directly lying to you and a lying tongue, somebody who habitually tells you something that is false or it's a sham, it's something that is not true, it says, they hate those that are afflicted by it. A flattering mouth works ruin. So if somebody's lying to you, they're showing you they don't care about you. They wouldn't lie to you. They wouldn't treat you that way if there was a love there. So if somebody's lying to you is basically what it's saying, then they're showing hatred towards you. Lying to someone not only hurts those that are being lied to, but it's also a clear indication that there's not a love for that person. So a lying tongue is not just one that flat out tells a lie, but something that is deceptive, something that draws people in as part of a sham, something that is leaving parts of the truth out. Well, I didn't lie, I just left truth out. Well, if it was deceiving and you're still trying to come up with the same results where they're not going to understand the truth, then it is a lie, or trying to deceive, simply deceive the listener. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. I know we're jumping around a little bit, but with seven things that God hates and to focus on those, I want to give us some examples and descriptions of those things so we have a clear picture in our mind. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. He says, finally, be you all of one mind, having compassion one for another, love as brethren, be pitiful and courteous. He says, not rendering evil for evil, or evil deeds for evil deeds, or railing for railing. He says, don't go back and forth with words towards one another, but contrariwise, a blessing, knowing that you are hereunto were you called, that you should inherit a blessing. You say, why am I focusing on this particular verse? Not rendering evil deeds one to another, or railing for railing. The word railing means slander. So it says not slandering or going slandering for somebody slanders you, so you slander them back. Verse 10 says, for he that loves life will see good days. Let him refrain his tongue from evil, that his lips speak no guile. It says you don't want to refrain. You don't want to go out towards someone else and slander or go back at them railing for railing. He says, learn to control the tongue. Let him refrain his tongue from evil and don't speak guile. The word guile here is another word that it's a Greek word dolos, D-O-L-O-S, and it means trickery or deceit. So it says, let him refrain his tongue from trickery and deceit. Again, when we look at this lying tongue, it doesn't just mean flat out telling a lie. It means somebody who tricks and deceives others, somebody who convinces them to do something that is wrong, which is no different than winking the eye, crossing the fingers or shuffling the feet, getting somebody to believe something or start doing something for you because you've deceived them or tricked them. Again, usually the sad thing is when somebody lies, one lie normally leads to another lie. And if somebody's lying to you and if they've lied to you once knowingly, you can expect there's going to be other lies that follow and you begin to realize, I can't trust this person. And that's why God says when we come to these types of individuals and these characteristics which he said he hates, he says you remove yourselves from them. Number three, hands that shed innocent blood. Now we could say, well, I've never killed anyone. I've never shed innocent blood. It isn't just talking about murder. This is someone who doesn't take into consideration or doesn't care what the consequences are of their actions toward other individuals. They run people over, metaphorically speaking, run people over, take advantage of them, and they feel nothing for those people. Someone who is willing to hurt others for their gain. Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. Now we can look at some of these and say, well, I've tried to avoid that my whole life. I've tried not to be like that. But a lot of these characteristics that God says he hates are also what he says are going to be rampant at the end of the age. And again, if we're around it on a constant basis and we begin to accept it, we can start becoming like that. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 10. He says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. He said, don't go in with them. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause. He said, we can take advantage of people and we can all do this together. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those who go down into the pit. We shall find precious substance and we shall fill our houses with spoil. We're going to make a bundle off of this, and it doesn't matter who we're doing this to. We can do it together. We can be rich and we can steal what we want. He says, cast in your lot among us. Let us have one purse and we'll share it all. My son, walk not in the way with them. Refrain your foot from their path. For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood, and surely in vain the net is spread in any sight of the bird, or any sight of any bird. When if you've ever tried to trap a bird, you see the cages where you put a little stick underneath and you've got a string, and you think, oh, it's going to be so easy to catch a bird, and the bird comes out and they walk all the way around it, they keep looking at it, and they're like, then they fly off. It's like the bird can see sometimes, this is a trap. This is going to be something I'm going to be caught in. So it says, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. If the bird watches you set the trap, they're not going to walk over and get under it and say, well, you know, I didn't know this was coming. Verse 18, they lay wait for their own blood, and they lurk privately for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, and which takes the lives of their owners thereof. Said anybody who's greedy for gain, going to take advantage of someone else, no matter how they get hurt. And of course, most people will try to cover that up and act like, well, no, I would never do something like that. It wasn't intentional. Again, it's a pretty simple one. God hates it when somebody takes innocent human lives and destroys them or abuses them. And especially if it's for their own personal gain. If they're doing something to someone else, for their personal gain, and another person suffers from it, God says, I hate that. I hate that attitude. Number four is a heart that devises wicked imaginations. Strong says the word wicked here in Hebrews is a word that means trouble, wickedness, affliction, something that is false, mischief, or unjust, unrighteous, or vain behavior. So a heart that devises wicked imaginations, a heart that devises mischief, or is always getting in trouble, always getting others in trouble. The word imaginations in the Hebrew is a word intention. It means cunning work, curious work, imaginations, or purposes or thoughts. So wicked thoughts, wicked imaginations, or a heart that devises or comes up with evil plans or evil intentions. Now, we may not know somebody personally where we go, oh, I know somebody that comes up with evil intentions. Or you may. If you've been in the workforce for years and years, you probably have ran into individuals who come up with evil intentions. If we can do this, this person's going to get fired, then I get to take their position. That kind of thing happens in the business world quite often. But as somebody who plans and conjures up ideas and wrong ideas and thoughts and makes devious plans for something, they're planning ahead to use trickery and deceit and to, usually the lying tongue. All of these tend to work with one another, but they're doing these things in advance to hurt someone or to have personal gain. But a heart that devises wicked imagination. Psalm chapter 37. Psalm 37 and verse 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself because of him who prospers in his way. Now, some people, and especially in the church, you go, why does it always seem like the wicked are prospering? Seems like the people who are doing things so wrong, they're just raking it in. And that's why some people look at that and they go, I'd like to have what he has. I want to be able to do what he's doing, except I try to do it right. It says, fret not yourself because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked devices to pass. Barnes says, because a man is allowed to accomplish his purposes of wickedness and is not arrested at once in his schemes of guilt. God says, that's not going to last. You know, somebody that devises wicked imaginations, if it's something God hates, God's going to make it apparent at some time. He says in verse 8, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Don't fret yourself in any way to do evil, for evildoers will be cut off. And those who wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. He said, you depend on God. We don't trust in others. We don't look to them going, okay, well, they're prospering, so maybe I can just kind of get on the bandwagon and pick up a little bit from this individual. He says, no, don't have anything to do with them. Wait on God. Not only are they doing something wrong, but they're thinking with a carnal and godless mind. Their minds and their actions go hand in hand. And you may not see all that they're doing, but inside and what they're thinking and their planning is what God is talking about here. And we have to realize we all have carnal nature and we're not exempt from that. I'm just talking with an individual this week and we're talking about carnal nature. And some have the idea, well, I had carnal nature, but once I came into the church and I have God's Spirit, I don't have carnal nature anymore. I've had somebody tell me that. They said, when we're converted, we don't have carnal nature. And I said, I can tell you right now, I've got carnal nature. And it comes out every once in a while, and you have to control it. We're not completely changed to spirit being in the family of God, and we have that carnal nature to fight. Romans chapter 1 and verse 21. Romans chapter 1, verse 21, and this is talking about individuals who apparently understood the truth and understood things at some point. But in verse 21, it says, because that when they knew God, meaning they had their eyes open and they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were they thankful, but they became vain in their imaginations and their foolish heart was darkened. They became vain in their thinking, in their imaginations, in what they invested their time and their energy into. In their imaginations means their thought, their notions, their speculations regarding God. Reading further in verse 22, it says, they profess themselves to be wise. And what did God say? If you exalt yourself as being wise and you have that proud heart, they became fools. They changed the glory of God, glory of the uncorruptible God, into the image made like corruptible man to birds, four-footed beast, and creeping things. It says, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, and through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie. Now, remember, we started out, it says, because when they knew God, individuals, even within the church, we can never get to the point where we say, I'm above all doing that. I've been converted for years. I could never fall into this kind of trap. This is talking about individuals who, when they knew God, they let it go. It said they changed the truth into a lie and they worshiped and served the creation more than the Creator who is blessed forever. Amen. And for this cause, God gave them up to vile affections. Even women did change the natural use to that which is against nature. And likewise also men, leaving the natural use of a woman, burned in their lust one for another. Men with men working which is unseemly and receiving for themselves that recompense of their own error which was meet. We see that happening in this age. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, because if you're doing those kind of things, you don't want to retain God in the knowledge because then you have guilt. They didn't want to retain God in their knowledge, but God gave them over to a reprobate mind or a rejected mind to do those things which are not convenient. So God says, you want to do those things, I'm going to reject you, and the knowledge and the truth that you have will be rejected. Now we see a list of some of the things that God hates. He goes on after saying, I will reject their minds, or they will be turned over to a reprobate or rejected mind. Verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness. Maliciousness is thinking ahead and planning things in advance, which is what we're reading about. Full of envy, murder, deceit, whisperers. So now we're talking about murder or doing things to individuals without worrying about what kind of harm it's going to bring them. The idea of hate is that if you've hated your brother without a cause, you've murdered. Deceit or whisperers, those who are a lying tongue or those who are deceitful with their tongue. Backbiters, haters of God, despisers, proud. Here's that proud heart again. Boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, and their covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, so it says they knew at some point the judgment of God, they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. They want to be with others who do those things because there's less guilt, less thought of God. They didn't want God in their hearts. And so we have to realize, just as carnal nature, sin begins in the mind. And God takes it very seriously, and he says, these attitudes and these characteristics of heart that I hate, he said, I want you to avoid that, and I want you to remove yourselves from those who do such things. And here in Romans, it talks about individuals who proclaim to know God, but then get caught up in these things and are drawn away from it and become just like those who are around them. So we have to guard the thoughts and not allow ourselves to get into that frame of mind, because it can drag us down. And we can be pulled away if we get caught up in that. Number five is feet that are swift in running to mischief. It's interesting. That's one of the things that God says he hates. Feet that are swift in running to mischief, or a person that hurries to mischief. Strong's Concordance says this word mischief is a word that means, in the Hebrew, evil, adversity, affliction, calamity. How many times, and this is what we call rubbernecking on the freeway, when there's an accident, people slow down because they want to see what's there. Or if there's an accident in a parking lot, people run over, not necessarily to help, but some people just run over and they want to see what took place. We had that happen in Tucson. There was a motorcycle on the street that wiped out in front of the mall, and it slid, and the guy was laying in the street, and his motorcycle caught fire, and the fire department had to come. Huge crowd around, and everybody talking about what they saw, what happened, and very few helping the individual, or maybe they didn't know how to help him, but it drew people over very quickly. So adversity, affliction, calamity, hurt, sorrow, trouble, wretchedness, or wrong. It's a person that hurries to be around these kind of things. Feet that are swift to running to mischief. Someone who sees something wrong and desires to be around it, desires to be a part of it. It says they run to it, or they're drawn to it. We see that in depicted in movies, and this is the way it was when I was in high school. You see two students begin to fight, and you hear the crowd chanting, fight, 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 and everybody runs over because they all want to see the fight. Feet that are swift and running to something that is mischief. And again, people are drawn to that type of thing because it's a carnal nature that we have. If there's trouble, he'll find it, is a common statement. As a teenager, we had an individual, I've mentioned this here in L.A. before, who always said, if something was wrong, he said, I know you had to be a part of it, pointing to me. He says, you had to be an instigator, or you started it. You were the one that's involved in it in some way. He liked pointing the finger at me for some reason. Sometimes I was involved. But most of the time I wasn't, and it was usually innocent things. It wasn't running to mischief or running to evil. It was just doing things, and oh, you didn't ask permission to do that, or you didn't get the approval. But it's individuals that are drawn towards fights, accidents, trouble, or, as it says, mischief. There's an example in Esther about Haman. And Haman was mischievous, and he was lying. He was constantly in mischief, and it came back to bite him in a very hard way. Haman had devised plans to destroy Mordecai and the Jews. Let's go to Esther chapter 8 and verse 1. Esther chapter 8 and in verse 1. It says, on that day the king Ahasuerus, did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman and the Jews enemy unto Esther the queen? And Mordecai came before the king, and Esther had told him what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman. After Haman had devised all these things, he took the ring from Haman, and he gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And Esther spoke yet again before the king and fell down at his feet. She wasn't running to mischief. Here we see an individual who was devising plans, who was devising mischief, and was trying to create problems and actually have them killed. Esther spoke again before the king, fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman. God says feet that are swift to running to mischief, God hates. He hated the deeds that Haman was doing to Mordecai and Esther. And Esther asked, will you put away the mischief of Haman and his devices that he has devised against the Jews? Not just his plans, but anything that he has devised in advance or gotten into the minds of individuals. Haman has devised evil plans against Esther and Mordecai. And Esther had asked not only that Haman be removed, but his plans, what he had already instituted to be taken and done in the kingdom, that those also be removed. So we see feet that are swift to run to mischief. We see examples of it just like with Haman here. He was devising plans ahead of time, and they were mischievous plans. Proverbs 24 verse 1 says, do not be envious against evil men, neither desire to be with them. We see this repeated over and over in these things that God hates. He says, don't even desire to be with them. Don't look up to them. Don't respect them. Don't run with them. Don't run after them thinking, well, this is where it's at because they're so popular and people are looking up to them. I know what they're doing is wrong, but everybody looks up to them, so I'm going to look up to them as well. Or the idea that people have, it's not what you know, it's who you know. If you know the right people, you'll get moved up to where you need to be. He says, do not be envious against evil men. He says, for their heart studies destruction and their lips talk of mischief. This is what he's saying here, that feet that are swift to run to mischief. We can't look to men who devise wrong ideas and think, well, they seem successful or they seem like they're blessed. And there are people who are doing evil things in the world and being blessed for it financially. But that's temporary. We said we don't run after them thinking, well, it must be good. They're blessed and they seem to get away with it. Well, they may get away with it for a time. But just as we read in the Proverbs, they're setting a trap for themselves and they will get caught. There's thousands of programs out there to show a person how to get rich. And in fact, now, again, at the time that we live in, when people are struggling, they get caught up in how to get rich. The only ones getting rich usually are those who deceive people into investing or giving them their money so they can show them how to be rich. And it's something that leaves people, like we said earlier, hurting them without having any feeling or thought of what it's doing to individuals. Number six, it says, a false witness that speaks lies. Now, earlier we saw that God says he hates a lying tongue. Now he says he hates a false witness that speaks lies. And you say, well, isn't that the same thing? How is this different from what God said is a lying tongue? Strong's Exhaustive Concordance says this word false in the Hebrew is untruth or without cause, deceitful or lying. So it's a lying witness, not just a false witness where we say, well, they may not have seen or they. It's somebody who's lying and deceitfully lying. But it says a false witness that speaks lies. It means someone who is lying or being deceitful as a witness against someone else. They come up with a lie to hurt someone else or to cause the end effect. And it says, and they lie to achieve that end. It's not just telling a lie, but it's condemning someone with a false witness. So lying is part of it. God hates a lying tongue, but he also hates a lying tongue that is a false witness against someone else. Witnessing or giving the impression that something is a certain way with an individual when it is not. Now, we may not have ever considered ourselves a false witness, but if we've ever said something about someone and it gave an impression and you're thinking, well, that gives the impression they're like this, but if I say something else now, it's going to make me look bad. You may have given a false impression of someone or a false sense of what somebody is like, and that's what it's saying here, that you're condemning somebody or giving false witness against someone with lies. Witnessing or giving the impression that something is a certain way when it is not. James 4 and verse 1 says, "Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaks evil of his brother or judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law." He said, you want to start judging and you want to start condemning an individual, it's going to come back on you. So he doesn't want us to speak evil of one another, but he doesn't want us using lies and deceit to be a witness against someone. And God says he hates that. Proverbs chapter 12. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 17. Proverbs 12 and verse 17, it says, "He that speaks truth shows forth righteousness, but a false witness deceit. There is that speaks like the piercing of a sword." Have you ever had somebody say something and you just had that nasty feeling in the pit of your stomach? It hurt by what they were telling you. It says there is one that speaks like the piercing of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. Or in some translations it says, is healing. "The lip of truth shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment." Even if it's a lying tongue in being a false witness, eventually things are going to be revealed. There's a passage, and it's one that I have fully trusted in. It's a good memory verse for all of us. Luke chapter 8 and verse 17. Luke chapter 8 and verse 17. It says, "For nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest." Manifest means revealed, just like it says the children of God are going to be manifest. They're going to be revealed. "Nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest," or not be revealed. "Neither anything that is hidden that shall not be made known or come abroad." Someone telling the truth, when it's found out that it is the truth, what does it change? If somebody's telling the truth and they're truthful to you, what is the end result? Well, usually it's trust. You gain the person's trust. You trust them because they have told you the truth on multiple occasions. And the truth is established. When you hear the truth and you go, okay, that's exactly what I've heard, that's what I saw, that's what I've read. So it's truth is established, is built, and you don't have that fear or mistrust when the truth is given. Matthew 15, verse 17, "Do you not yet understand that whatever enters into the mouth of the belly is cast out into the draught? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile a man." So it's talking about what defiles a man. What brings him down? "For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, and false witnesses, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man." And he went on to explain, "But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man." So the things that come out of his heart, his character, is what defiles a man. And so when we look at speaking the truth and telling the truth about others, or speaking the truth, especially when witnessing or being a witness of something, God knows the hearts, he knows the thoughts, and the things that we say and why we say them. Because even if you're saying the truth, it may be used in a way that's deceptive. So God hates a false witness that speaks lies, one that lies to bring down another individual. Number seven is he that sows discord among brethren. It's interesting that God finishes with this, the six things that he hates, and all seven of these are an abomination to him. He said he hates one that sows discord among brethren, those who are brothers and sisters. It's interesting that this word appears only twice in the Old and New Testaments, and both are right here in the book of Proverbs, and the one we read leading into it. The word discord in the Hebrew is a word medan, M-E-D-A-N, and it means discord or strife. So he who spreads strife among the brethren, or he who spreads discord among the brethren. Let's go to James chapter 3 and verse 13. James chapter 3 and verse 13. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of his good conduct his works with meekness and wisdom. Says, again, we go back to the basis of conduct or conduct within the church. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, do not glory and do not lie against the truth. You see how many of so many of these things are connected. The seven things that God hates and abhors are connected with one another, and usually the traits are associated. The lying, the deceit, the speaking evil, treating others without any care or concern. All of these tie together. Barnes note says, if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, that is your characteristic. That's what makes up your characteristic. There is a reference here to a fierce and unholy zeal against one another, or a spirit of ambition or contention. Some have a spirit of contention. They always want to debate. They always want to fight. They always want to argue. And they always want to create something that gets people going back and forth towards one another. Glory not. He says, don't boast. In such cases, your qualifications... to be public teachers. It says, don't glory about, well, I'm qualified to be the one who's teaching you, or I'm qualified to be one who is talking about this subject. Nothing would render you more unfit for such an office than that type of spirit. It says, do not lie against the truth. You would not lie against what is true by setting up a claim to the requisite qualifications of such an office. This is your if this is your spirit, and men should seek no office or station to which they could not properly seek if the whole truth were known about them, or if the whole truth about them were known. They shouldn't seek an office if the whole truth about them were known. We see that in politics. People get into politics, they get into position, they're government officials, and then all these stories come up about them and what they've done and the corruption that they were involved in. It says you should not be in a position of authority or that type of position if the whole truth were known about you. So it says, do not lie against the truth. It says, don't hide the truth. Don't conceal it. And again, it's an interesting statement. Some in the church's history, deacons, elders, pastors, have had shady pasts. And sometimes they think, well, nobody knows these things. And eventually things have come out and people are like, oh, we never knew them. They've been in the church 30 or 40, 50 years. Nobody knew these things about them. And what we're reading of when it says nothing done in secret is going to be made plain. It's going to be revealed. It says this wisdom descends not from above, but of earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife are, there is confusion and every evil work. It says somebody who's stirring up envy and strife, or somebody who's causing division, he said that it's going to be something that causes confusion among people. Strife here means contentions or fractions. Encarta Dictionary defines factions as dissenting minority within a larger group. It's a smaller group of people that are in the larger body that begin to separate themselves for a particular reason. A group that is a minority within a larger group and has interests or beliefs that are not always in harmony with a larger group. People who get others to join them in being disgruntled so that they feel like they're not doing it alone. Somebody who's disgruntled and they just start working on others and finding, okay, this person, they kind of agree with me, so I'm going to feed them some more information until they go, oh, yeah, you're right. This is what's going on. Okay, great. Now you're with me and finding other people that to join them and be a part of what they're doing to become a smaller division of the larger group. The actions they take separate the larger group, and that is what the definition of discord is. Verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above, if we have godly wisdom, is pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated. If somebody is speaking the wisdom that's from above, it's easy to listen to. And you're not debating. You're not arguing about it. It's like, well, this is truth, and this is right from the scripture. It's easy to be entreated. Full of mercy and good works, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them who make peace, not in those who sow discord. So once again, we see the knowing them by their fruits, by the way a person acts, by the way their heart is. These are the qualities that we're looking for, and these are the actions of an individual who's not trying to cause strife. It's somebody who's speaking the truth in love. So do we walk according to these? We need to avoid individuals or groups that especially they have ulterior motives or you see them causing factions, divisions. We need to watch out for one another when we see somebody getting caught up in those kind of things, whether it be at work and they're following after an individual. We should say, yeah, I hope you're not getting too caught up in this life and in the world around us. When one is sowing discord, especially among the brethren, and that's what God says he hates, is he who sows discord among the brethren. When we see that happening, it should be brought to attention immediately. And that's something that I appreciate because it's happened here in Los Angeles, where individuals begin to sow discord and, well, the church is teaching the wrong things. To have somebody stand up and go, no, that's not right. If you don't believe that, why are you here? If you don't believe what we're teaching, don't believe what Scripture says, then what are you doing here? Not allowing them to sow discord. Discord and factions will destroy, just as leaven will spread throughout a lump of dough or discord spreading throughout a group of people. It destroys. Now, gossip and rumors can also cause discord. It may not be just, I'm trying to get a group of people to believe what I believe, but gossip and rumors. I want to read from a magazine article, Virtual Christian. God's interpretation of a fool is not someone who is harmless, as we often think. You know, we think of a fool, and this guy just has no idea what he's doing. So God's interpretation of a fool is not someone who's harmless, but rather one who is dangerous. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. Whoever spreads slander is a fool. The article goes on, gossiping lacks total discretion and often involves meddling in someone else's life. Now, when we go back to, it says, those who take the lives of others without a cause, or those who cause people problems and not worry about, well, I don't care what happens to them. That's what we do when gossiping. It says, meddling in another person's life, and you may be harming them, as it said, that sword that pierces through. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with the lips. An individual who continually gossips is someone who spends words like a fool spends time and money. Again, is there ever a time when a person's gossiping and you're going, okay, I really don't want to hear this, or this is coming across with a different intent behind it? Is there ever a time to say something? Or if somebody's doing something wrong, is it our responsibility? Or do we say, nope, I'll just remove myself from them and it's not my responsibility to say something? Again, it is our responsibility. It says we don't want to associate with somebody who's doing those things, but it is something that we should say, you know, we shouldn't be doing that, or you shouldn't be saying those kind of things, or that's not something I need to hear about that person. That's tough to do, but it also stops slandering. It stops gossip very quickly. If it's something that will cause discord or division among a congregation, then absolutely it's something where we have to say, no, yeah, I don't want to be a part of that. That needs to stop. going to a brother is always the right thing to do and following the biblical principle the way it's given. Because so many people have said, I've tried Matthew 18, it doesn't work. God says it works. God says if you follow it the way you're supposed to follow it, it works. And usually the ones who say it doesn't work, but did you do this? Yes. Did you do the step two? Well, no, I jumped to the last step. Oh, well, you got to do the steps. You got to follow through in all of it. It works. And if there's contention or there's something going on, it says go to your brother. It also depends on who you're telling it to and why. Psalm 101 verse 5 tells us, whoever privately slanders his neighbor, him will I cut off. He says you don't want to privately slander your neighbor, or as it says here, your brethren. Him that has a high look and a proud heart will I not suffer. He said, I'm not going to allow them to continue doing that. Whoever privately slanders his brother, literally one who speaks concerning his neighbor in secret. If a man has any good to say of another, he'll likely say it openly. You never come up, you see somebody going, I got to tell you something, come here. Oh, so-and-so, they got a high position in their job this week and it's really good news. No, you come over and you go, this is something great. Did you hear what so-and-so got? They got promoted in their job. So it says, one who speaks concerning his neighbor in secret is wrong, but if there's truth, if it's something good, you're going to say it openly. He that has evil to say will likely be saying it in secret. Hence, to speak in secret of anyone comes to mean the same thing as to slander him. So dealing in truth and dealing with situations shouldn't be done secretly or in a way that's going to cause division. God says, go directly to them first, and you do it in truth, as it says, speaking the truth in love. And we always want that intent behind it because that, again, comes from the heart. Truth is eventually going to come out in the end, and truth doesn't have to be something we spread secretly. Now, I know in the past there's times where we had to speak the truth secretly because there were so many who were leaving the truth, and you had to figure out who can I speak the truth to and who can I not. But truth is not something that we have to hold back from. And usually that's when we got persecuted, is when you said, no, I will stand for the truth. The truth is going to stand by itself. But God hates the sowing of discord among the brethren. He said, I hate it when individuals sow discord, when they start to divide people instead of bringing them together. So these are the six things that God says he hates, and seven are an abomination to him. The combination of all of these together, God says, I abhor these attitudes and this action. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked imaginations, and feet that are swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among the brethren. We have to be aware of these things around us, and more importantly, we have to be aware of these things in ourselves, making sure that we don't have any of these things that God says he hates. There are counterparts. There are other actions that we should be taking. As Satan seeks to destroy whom he will, and knowing that he has a short time left, he is going in wrath after the people of God. The world's deceived already, and he will continue to deceive, but that anger is towards God's people, and he will attack the church more and more, and it's in attitudes and characteristics. And that's what God says in these seven things that he's addressing, their attitudes and characteristics, and Satan will do all he can to get to us and deceive us into falling into this trap. Let's avoid the seven behaviors that God says he absolutely hates.